5 p.m. on Friday. Second show of the new year already. We are veterans, baby. Breaking in. Time for American at Radio on 90.3 WHBC. I'm Tom Ryan here every Wednesday. And I was here on Wednesday, and so was Heidi.
We didn't forget for a change.
January 1st, and here today again as well for the How Music Changed series that we've been doing every Friday. A couple weeks back, we switched segments, as you know, it's 250 that we want to cover. And at the rate we're going to need about 250 years to do them all. But we're trying. We're trying to squeeze them all in. Got to keep a positive attitude about these things. But we went from talking about radio days, the AM radio days of the 20s up until 1954. And then we dove right in. It was a rather incredible coincidence that it segued this way, but the way things work out, to the next series, which we are calling Transistor Days, or American Hit Radio, just like my book. It's that simple. American Hit Radio's Transistor Days, which starts in 1955, and we're going to take this up into the 60s. Now, we've been moving. So this is show number three. We've done two shows so far in this series on Friday. The previous shows, by the way, if you're interested, are posted on our website, AmericanHitNetwork.com, or just search for American Hit Radio. It's very easy. I suggest you check them out, because since we've started the Transistor Days series, of which, as I said, this is show number three, things are going to start happening at a relatively quick pace. Even like right now, each show covers about a half a year of history. Show number one was the first half of 1955. Last week was the second half of 55. And this week represents the first half of 1956. And let me tell you, I mean, with those past two shows that we did, what a difference a year made. 1995 came in supporting one of the tamest, lamest musical years in the history of recording. But that intensely conservative mood caused a backlash that resulted in R&B artists charting on the pop charts to middle American teenagers. Now, this show, which begins in early 1956, was to pretty much prove that the change was no fluke. It was still a battle, but the ratio to good to bad songs began to increase dramatically, giving parents everywhere significant cause for concern, especially as the music grew even more raucous. These were heady days, and 1956 was most certainly a very exciting and confusing year to be a teenager. So let's get to it. Our first track up, speaking of the teenagers, the band that recorded this track happens to be the Teenagers, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. They were rock and roll's first all-teenaged act. It was the first act where you could say it made it very obvious that this music was meant to be appealing to the younger set. And that in itself was a bit of a serious mind shift, because now we weren't dealing with adults who were on the scene or nightclubbing or going out to see big bands. We're dealing with kids that are living with their parents at home, dealing with their own school issues. And that's where a lot of these artists began to direct their songs at that age group. The Teenagers were out of the Washington Heights section of Manhattan. Frankie Lyman actually, you know, joined the group. And he actually helped them rewrite one of the songs that they were working on. And they auditioned for G Records. And what's really kind of interesting is that the original lead singer, whose name was Santiago, I forget his first name, Herman Santiago, was supposed to sing lead at the audition, but he was sick. So Frankie Lyman said, "Hey, I helped write the song. I know it. I'll sing lead." They got signed to G Records. And that coincidence made Frankie Lyman the lead singer. It all seemed so wonderful and innocent at the time. So sad to think that in just a few short years, Frankie Lyman would be addicted to heroin almost immediately, actually. By the time he was 15 years old, he had a full-bore heroin addiction.
Oh, wow. That's terrible.
Yep. Dead by 25. So sadly. And never paid songwriting royalties ever in his entire lifetime. The rumor that I had heard was that after he signed his contract, they gave him a bicycle.
Wow. That's a travesty.
Isn't that something else? Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. Here they are with Why Do Fools Fall in Love on 90.3 WHPC. Awesome. Such a happy song and so uplifting. It's so sad that on the personal side of things, it was so awful for Frankie Lyman. They never really had another hit after that. There was a minor hit called, you know, I'm Not a Juvenile Delinquent, but didn't really go nearly as far as that track. Now, what we've done for the past 2 weeks seems as though we were playing extremes, very much so, in fact. When we were playing the major label stuff, it was always like unbearably painful for the most part, the stuff that we were covering. It was stuff like the McGuire Sisters and the Crew Cuts and the Four Aces and Pat Boone. And then we'd be playing the hipper stuff, which was almost always R&B artists like the Platters and Chuck Berry and the Eldorados and Little Richard. There wasn't very much middle ground. I'm mentioning it because finally there is an artist that is absolutely not rock and roll, but still incredibly hip and be able to put out a song that's incredibly sophisticated at this point in time that stood the test of time. Who else but Louis Armstrong would be that person?
Duh.
Now, in 1956, Louis picked up on a song that was written by Bertolt Brecht and Kurt Weill from the Three Penny Opera. They called it Mordetat. Now, Mordetat is just a word that applied to a murder ballad that would have been performed in medieval times. Somebody with strolling minstrels would walk by and sing about somebody's murder or something like that. And that would be called a Mordetat. It was actually a style of telling a story in medieval fashion. Well, Brecht and Weill decided that they would incorporate that sort of thing into the Three Penny Opera by having a character on a pump organ come in and explain the bad guy in the Three Penny Opera, telling us all about Macheath and what he was like. And it did well in Europe. It came to America, and it didn't do well really at all in the beginning. And then in 1954... an American named Mark Blitzstein rewrote the words. and made them so much cooler. And that made a big difference. Here's an example. Like the German words, unter Haifisch, der Satan, you know, whatever. But when they translated it the first time for America, this is what how they translated the first verse. End the shark, it has teeth, and it wears them in the face. And MacNeith, he has a knife, but the knife can't be seen. Kind of flat. So what happens is this guy, Mark Blitzstein, kind of in 1954, gets a little bit smarter with it. And he writes, oh, the shark has pretty teeth, dear. And he shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has MacNeith, dear. And he keeps it out of sight. So it's rhyming
better.
It's got so much cooler. It's hipper. Lewis dug it. Said wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. And to make it even more awesome, I didn't know this was true, Lotta Lenya, who was the lover, well, the wife of Kurt Weill, the person who was responsible for the words of the song, came into the recording studio when Louis Armstrong recorded it. So he's playing the song and he's doing the words, but Lewis always riffs. You know, he always like makes, you know, he goes off the cuff. He was always like that quick thinking sort of a personality. And he sees Lotta Lenya in the studio. So he starts to name drop her. She wasn't written into the song. He just says, you know, like, you know, and look out, Miss Lotta Lenya. So he just drops that in, makes it up on the spot. And now nobody can do the song without mentioning Lotta Lenya's name. When Bobby Darin covered it, he took Louis Armstrong's version word for word.
Sure, why not? It was perfect.
And yeah, because Louis already did it perfectly.
Right.
So it all just comes from the genius of Louis Armstrong. Partly, you know, of course, the song itself is strong, but Louis and the way he riffs on it is really what brings it across. And the way that he's able to just, you know, throw Lotta Lenya in there for good measure is pretty awesome. So here is Mac the Knife by Louis Armstrong on 90.3 WHBC.
The shark has pretty teeth, dear, and he shows them a pearly white. Just a jackknife has MacNeith, dear, and he keeps it out of sight. When the shark bites with his teeth, dear, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves though wears MacNeith, dear, so there's not a trace of red. On the sidewalk Sunday morning even lies a body oozing life. Someone sneaking around the corner. Is this someone, Mac the Knife, from a tugboat by the river? A cement bag's drooping down. Yes, the cement's just for the weight, dear. Bet you MacNeith's back in town. Look a year, Louis Miller disappeared, dear, after drawing out his cash. And MacNeith spends like a sailor. Did our boy do something rash? Suki Tawdry, Jenny Diver, Lotta Lenya, sweet Lucy Brown, Oh, the line forms on the right, dear. Now that Mackie's back in town.
Take it, Satch.
Never gets old. Louis Armstrong. Been doing it at this point in time now for over 30 years. Professional musician, 1956. One of the first recording some jazz records going all the way back to his New Orleans days in the mid-20s. Well, something else. All right, 1956. This is cool because now you really do start to hear how the rock and roll artists are beginning to come out of the woodwork with their songs for kids. It was a band out of Harlem, New York, another doo-wop group that had been around for a few years. They'd been active since 1953, had a lead singer named Earl Carroll. And the band had a manager named Esther Navarro. So he wrote a song based around Earl's nickname. So all of his friends happened to call him Speedo on 90.3 WHPC.
Boom, boom, boom. Tonight y'all can call me Speedo, but my real name is Mister. Tonight y'all can call me Speedo, but my real name is Mister. Fellas and taking other folks' girls. Well, naughty, y'all can call me Speedo, cause I don't believe in wasting time. Well, naughty, y'all can call me Speedo, cause I don't believe in wasting time. Well, I'm known for pretty women and I've caused them to change their mind. Now some may call me Joe, some may call me Mo. Just remember Speedo, he don't ever take it slow. Well, naughty, y'all can call me Speedo, but my real name is Mister. Naughty, y'all can call me Speedo, but my real name is Mister. Call me Joe. Yes, man, my Speedo, he don't ever take it slow. Well, naughty, y'all can call me Speedo, but my real name is Mister. Well, naughty, y'all can call me Speedo, but my real name is Mister. And naughty, gonna call me Speedo till they call off making pretty girls.
Believe it or not, that band, they had so many personnel changes. I mean, they changed personnel more often than Cher changed costumes in a concert. But the leader, Earl, you know, his real Mr. Earl, like, kept coming back. He was back in the band and up to 1979. At one point, they hired a drummer named Teddy Pendergrass. And eventually, he switched over to singing. And he was actually a member of the Cadillacs until he started his own group with Harold Melvin. Hmm. It became Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. There's a bit of history for you. Mm-hmm. All right, so there's like the alternative side, and it's becoming, like I said, the hipper stuff is getting kind of hipper, cooler, but there's still this backlash. The big labels, Columbia, RCA, are still pushing back. Perry Como happens to be recording on RCA Records, and you might be amazed to learn the song that we just played, Speedo, went to number 17 on the pop charts. Mac the Knife went to number 20. Why Do Fools Fall in Love went to number 6. This song by Perry Como went to number 1. stayed there for a few weeks, too. I bet you never heard it before, and you're probably going to wish you never hope to hear it again. It's called Hot Diggity Dog Ziggity Boom on 90.3 WHPC.
Oh, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight.
Never dreamed anybody could kiss that away, bring me bliss that away. What a kiss that away, what a wonderful feeling to feel that away. Tell me, where have you been all my life?
Oh, hot ziggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight.
Never knew that my heart could go zing that away, ting-a-ling that away, make me sing that away. Said goodbye to my troubles, they went that away, ever since you came into my life.
Oh, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight.
Little cottage for two that away, skies are blue that away, dreams come true that away. If you say I can share it with you that away, I'll be happy the rest of my life.
Oh, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? It's so new to me. What you do to me? Hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? When you're holding me tight. Oh, hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? All my future will shine. Hot diggity dog, ziggity boom, what you do to me? From the moment you're mine.
Hot dog.
You can't get that time back.
No, that's gone forever. I apologize. But that is what the major labels were trying to utilize to squelch rock and roll, to hold it down. Of course it didn't work. I mean, it's crazy. Now, in the meantime, I don't know if you listen to the first series that we did, the Radio Days series, before, and that was just like maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, when we were playing songs from 1954, played something by a guy named Elvis Presley, somebody that, it wasn't a hit. This is just stuff that he was recording that was regional. So let's pick that up right now, now that it's 1956, because unless you were a big fan of country music in 1954 or 1955, chances are you had no idea who Elvis Presley was. While he was at Sun Records in Memphis, Tennessee, Elvis recorded just under a score of songs that today are among the most seminal recordings of all time. But none of the Sun recordings ever made the top 40 pop charts. In retrospect, this seems amazing, considering that the widespread effect that these 17 or so songs had on music. But at the time, Elvis's success on local radio seemed sufficient. And for a country boy, it would have been foolish to think that anything more than regional fame was within his grasp. No major label was signing rock and roll, rhythm and blues artists, black or white. So independent labels were the ones that were picking up on the slack, as my point was made. In this way, rock and roll music in the beginning was more or less kept to a cottage industry. Now, it is impossible to overemphasize the importance role that Sam Phillips played in developing Elvis Presley's original style and artistry. When Phillips started Sun Records, his intention was to record the local blues artists who could not get a fair deal with all the other Southern recording studios. After a time, Phillips began recording white country artists who were interested in trying something new. By combining their country sound with a steady beat and adding the unrestrained qualities of rhythm and blues, a new, accessible style resulted. If you doubt the success of Philip's formula. Here is just a few of the artists whose career he launched within a few years' time. Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, Roy Orbison, and, of course, this guy named Elvis Presley. Phillips knew what he was doing. And the new style that he and these country boys developed was dubbed rockabilly. The rockabilly sound eventually became a stylization of double-time beats and hiccup vocals drenched in echo. But in its original form, it was much more powerful. It was blacker than contemporary rockabilly, with a definite feel for the lyrics. The legacy of Elvis's Sun recordings will probably last as long as the recorded evidence exists. Unfortunately, though, his fame outgrew the label that spawned him, and his new manager, Colonel Tom Parker, lured him into a contract with RCA Records. RCA bought Elvis's contract from Philips for a total of $40,000 with the intention of making Elvis Presley a pop star. It sounds like Philips was taken at the time, but you got to think about this. He got paid 40 grand for a kid that never had a hit record. Pretty amazing, really. Now, his first single for RCA was released in early 1956, and suddenly, Elvis Presley became the embodiment of rock and roll. The song went to number one on the national pop charts and stayed there for 8 weeks. As far as middle America was concerned, Elvis could have come from Mars, because nobody, especially a white nobody, had ever made music like that before. Elvis Presley on RCA Records with his first huge hit single called Heartbreak Hotel on 90.3 WHPC.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that Heartbreak Hotel. So lonely, baby. Well, I'm so lonely. I'll be just so lonely, I could die. Although it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken-hearted lovers to cry there in the gloom. I'll be just so lonely, baby. I'll be just so lonely. I'll be so lonely, they could die. Tears keep flowing, the desk clerk's dressed in black. Well, they've been so long on Lonely Street, they'll never look back and think you're so, they think you're so lonely, baby. Well, they're so lonely, well, they're so lonely, and they could die. Well, if your baby leaves you, you got a tale to tell. Well, just take a walk down Lonely Street to Heartbreak Hotel, where you will be, because you're so lonely, baby. Well, you'll be lonely, you'll be so lonely, you could die. So lonely, baby. Well, they're so lonely. They'll be so lonely they could die.
I don't know if you notice it, but on that mix, I mean, Elvis's voice is so far out in front. His talent was anything less than extraordinary. That record would have been a disaster. But as it is, it's like he's flaunting the fact that he has no precedent. Like, yeah, I'm the first. Now, as far as his label mates on Sun, if I dwell on it long enough, it can be both mind-boggling and depressing, actually, to recognize how cruelly life has treated some of rockabilly's most important pioneers. I mean, it was bad enough that a fickle marketplace would quickly abandon rockabilly for the faux musicianship of Frankie Avalon and Bobby Rydell. We'll be going there in a few weeks, thus causing financial hardship. But even worse was the adversity that was faced by both Carl Perkins and his close friend Roy Orbison. Both of these men would survive obstacles that most people could hardly even imagine. and yet their public personas never betrayed any bitterness or depression that such horrible circumstances might usually generate. If you could imagine this, I mean, just thinking about what happened to Roy Orbison on his own. At the peak of his fame, Orbison saw his wife killed in a motorcycle accident, only to have his home burned down 2 years later, taking the lives of two of his children.
Oh, tragedy.
Carl Perkins' tragedy began on the eve of his first national television appearance, an event that very well might have thrust him into the limelight on the exact same scale as Elvis Presley. Think now, Carl Perkins was a songwriter and a singer and a guitar player. He had a lot going on. While he was sleeping in the back of a limousine that was carrying him to New York, the fatigued driver slammed into an oncoming truck, killing himself instantly, then careened through a guardrail and down an embankment into a water-filled ravine where a still unconscious Perkins nearly drowned. He suffered damaged vertebrae, while his brother, the guitarist Jay, had a broken neck. By the time Perkins made it back for a rescheduled appearance, the momentum had been lost, and he became an afterthought, usurped by Elvis and the promotional machine known as Colonel Tom Parker. 2 years later, his brother Jay would succumb to brain cancer. Carl would mask his misery by drinking excessively, watching his career slip further toward oblivion. At one point, he accidentally shot himself in the foot, and in a separate incident, nearly lost the fingers on his left hand and his life from loss of blood when he accidentally thrust his hand into an exposed overhead fan while on stage. His remaining brother and bass player drifted into a serious state of alcoholism and committed suicide years after Perkins felt compelled to fire him. It'd be far too easy and incredibly short-sighted, though, to dismiss Carl Perkins as a one-hit wonder. He would see his career rejuvenated by four long-haired English boys who recorded four of his songs in 1964, more than any other artist covered by the Beatles. And he would also become an inaugural inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Blue Suede Shoes may have provided the impetus, but Carl Perkins had a talent that went far beyond this groundbreaking track. But here it is, by Carl Perkins, Blue Suede Shoes on 90.3 WHPC.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue. Me down, step in my face, slander my name all over the place, and do anything that you wanna do. But honey, lay off of my shoes, and don't you step on my blue suede shoes. You can do anything, but lay off of my blue suede shoes. Car, you drank my liquor from my old fruit jar. You do anything that you wanna do, but honey, lay off of them shoes and don't you step on my blue suede shoes. You can do anything, but lay off of my blue suede shoes. For the show, three to get ready. Now go, cat, go, but don't you step on my blue suede shoe. You can do anything but lay off of my blue suede shoe. But it's blue, blue, blue suede shoe. Blue, blue, blue suede shoe. Yeah, blue, blue, blue suede shoe, baby. Blue, blue, blue suede shoe. You can do anything but lay off of my blue suede shoe.
Now, for a while, Carl Perkins and Elvis Presley toured together. But Presley was nonplussed because sometimes the audience would be still clamoring for Perkins when Elvis came out to do his set. So Elvis decided that he didn't want to perform with Perkins anymore because he was stealing some of his...
taking the limelight.
Yeah. It was Carl Perkins who became the first country artist to appear on Billboard's R&B chart. And all signs pointed to a spectacular career. When record sales reached 500,000 copies, and it would soon more than double that during its run as a hit, Sun Records president Sam Phillips arranged to present Carl Perkins with a gold record during his first nationally televised appearance on the Perry Como show. He went so far as to hire a limousine to carry Perkins and his band from Memphis to the New York television studio where he was scheduled to appear. As it turns out, we can only wonder what fate might have had in store if that journey had gone as planned. Up next, we played this band twice already. They were pretty much ubiquitous in 1955 and 1956. One of the best and most loved bands by pretty much, because they crossed over so well. This is the third track we're playing from, a number four hit for the Platters called You've Got the Magic Touch on 90.3 WHBC.
You've got the magic touch. It makes me glow so much. It casts a spell. It rings a bell. The magic touch. Oh, when I feel your charm, it's like a four alarm. You make me thrill so much. You've got the magic touch. Magic touch. Here I go, really. Oh, oh, I'm feeling the glow. Oh, oh. But where can I go from you? I didn't know too much, and then I felt your touch, and now I've learned I can return the magic touch.
Stunning vocals of Tony Williams singing lead with the Platters. Now, the past couple of weeks, we played the copycat game, and let's do that again a little bit. We started the show with Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers singing Why Do Fools Fall in Love? And it's time to go back to that track. We did this a lot with a band called the Crew Cuts already. They're a band out of Canada, and we had them doing their versions of, let's see, Earth Angel for one and Gumdrop for another. This time, it's the Diamonds. They do a slightly better job of it. They're also from Canada. So I begin to like get this like sort of like resentment for Canada because they go to these like groups of four white guys that are like stealing this R&B stuff and Canadaizing it. Somehow. Again, this is a group that was on, they won first place on the Arthur Godfrey Talent Show. Every time I say that, you know you're going to get a corny act. Well, the Diamonds decided to do their version, but what's different about it this time is when the Diamonds put it out, first of all, Frankie Lyman's got out ahead of time and it charted in the top 10. So by the time that the Diamonds got along to putting their version out a month later, it didn't do quite as well. It didn't do bad. It went to number 12, but the trend was beginning to reverse. The original was beginning to beat the copy. Here is that copy on 90.3 WHPC by the Diamonds.
Hey, doom up, doom up, doom up, doo doo.
Ooh wah, ooh wah.
It sounds like
I feel so square.
It's like they got sticks up their butt or something. That's the Oompa version of it. All right. So let's play this game once again. Now, we ended last week's show with two versions of Tutti Frutti. Played Pat Boone's first mercifully because we wanted to end with Little Richard's version of Tutti Frutti. But now it's about 3 months later, 4 months later. It's April. After Little Richard heard Pat Boone's pale imitation of Tutti Frutti, he got mad. When Boone's version charted higher than his own version, he decided to get even. He and producer Bumps Blackwell determined to record a song so raucous, so wild, so black that Pat Boone wouldn't be able to wrap his mouth around it. A teenage fan from Mississippi named Nordis Johnson supplied a lyrical idea to Little Richard. Writing about catching her Uncle John running around behind her sick Aunt Mary's back, Johnson submitted a few lines of lyric, hoping that Little Richard would be able to do the rest. Now, if anybody was capable of completing a song about backdoor sexual promiscuity, it was Little Richard. The song became a lyrical masterpiece, but it was sung so fast that nobody understood it. Even the Beatles, when they recorded their version a decade later, had to bluff their way through a line or two. You listen to the Beatles version of it, you'll hear Paul slur some of the words. While most listeners assumed Long Tall Sally was another nonsense rhyme, the lyrics were no such thing. They quite blatantly tell the tale of Uncle John messing with bald head Sally, she's built for speed, and seeing Aunt Mary coming, so we ducked back in the alley. The song was sung at such a breakneck speed that it could have discouraged him. It should have discouraged imitations. But with the will of a man attempting to deny the forces of his own nature, Pat Boone did record Long Tall Sally, or more accurately, something resembling it, with the same title and chord changes. This time, Little Richard has the edge. He reached number 6, while Pat Boone's version nipped at his heels, holding at number 8. At least the original, like I said, trends are beginning to change a little bit. Let's hear them both back-to-back for a goof. Here's two versions of Long Tall Sally on 90.3 WHPC.
Gonna tell Aunt Mary about Uncle John. He claim he has a misery, but he's having a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby. Having me some fun tonight. Yeah. Well, Long Tall Sally, she's Bibble Species God. Everything that Uncle John need, oh, baby. And he ducked back in the alley, oh, baby. Yes, baby. Ooh, baby. Having me some fun tonight. Yeah. Oh!
He says he had the blues, but he has a lot of fun. Oh, baby, yes, baby, ooh, baby, I'm having me some fun tonight, yeah. Oh, well, Long Tall Sally has a lot on the ball, and nobody cares if she's long and tall. Oh, baby, yes, baby, ooh, baby, I'm having me some fun tonight. Well, I saw Uncle John with a long, tall Sally. He saw Mary coming and he ducked back in the alley. Oh, baby, yes, baby, ooh, baby, I'm having me some fun tonight. Sally has a lot on the ball, and nobody cares if she's long and tall. Oh, baby, yes, baby, ooh, baby, I'm having me some fun tonight, yeah. Well, I saw Uncle John with a long, tall Sally. He saw Mary coming, and he ducked back in the alley. Oh, baby, oh, yes, baby, ooh, baby, I'm having me some fun tonight. We're gonna have some fun tonight. Gonna have some fun tonight. We're gonna have some fun tonight. Everything'll be alright. We're gonna have some fun. Gonna have some fun tonight.
Oh God, I love hating that song so much.
Well, wasn't that just dandy?
It cracks me up so much. It's unbelievable. Well, there you go, back to back. How do you cure rock and roll? Send Pat Boone. All right, let's pick up. We played Fats Domino last week, and he was on a roll. He did most of his writing with his with Dave Bartholomew, who was his main collaborator, helped produce his stuff. This is his third number one hit on the R&B bestsellers chart. On the pop charts, didn't do so bad either. Went to number three on the pop charts. the B-side was his version of My Blue Heaven, which was also a bit of a hit. So here's Fats on 90.3 WHPC.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you. Yes, I do. And I'm saving all my love in jail for you. Need your loving and I need it bad. Just like a dog when he's going mad. Ooh-wee, baby, ooh-wee. Baby, won't you give your love to me? Any minute in money more. Told me didn't want me around no more. Ooh-wee, baby, ooh-wee. Baby, don't you let your dog bite me. Jail for you. Any minute and money more. Told me you didn't want me around no more. Ooh-wee, baby, ooh-wee. Baby, don't you let your dog bite me.
Quick One by Fats Domino. Another strange trend. This is like, I'm playing this as like a great miss rather than a hit, but it's such an oddity that I think I ought to go to it. Is the novelty record. This is the song that pretty much made a career for Dr. Demento. He literally, I think this is the first thing that he played, and this is where he began to take on the name Dr. Demento, because he would play this, and people said, oh my God, how would you be so crazy to play that?
You're so demented.
Right. Whoa. I mean, it's a song that came out in June of 1956, and it's about a really bad driver who needs blood transfusions all the time. The artist is Nervous, and the song is Transfusion on 90.3 WHPC.
Tooling down the highway doing 79. I'm a twin pipe popper and I'm feeling fine. Hey man, dig that, was that a red stop sign? Transfusion, transfusion, I'm just a solid mess of contusions. Never, never, never gonna speed again. Slip the blood to me, bud. I jump in my rod about a quarter to nine. I gotta make a date with that chick of mine. I cross the center line, man, you gotta make time. Transfusion, oh man, I got the cotton picking convolutions. I'm never, never, never gonna speed again. Shoot the juice to me, Bruce. My foot's on the throttle and it's made of lead, but I'm a fast riding daddy with a real cool head. I'm a gonna pass a truck on the hill ahead. Transfusion, my red corpse suckles are in mass confusion. Never, never, never gonna speed again. Pour the crimson in me, Jimson. I took a little drink and I'm a feeling right. I can fly right over everything, everything in sight. There's a slow poking cat, I'm gonna pass him on the right. Transfusion, I'm a real gone pale face, and that's no illusion. I'm a never, never, never gonna speed again. Pass the claret to me, Barrett. I'm rolling down the mountain on a rainy day. Oh, when you see me coming, better start to pray. I'm a cutting up the road and I'm the boss all the way. Transfusion, transfusion. Oh, Doc, pardon me for this crazy intrusion. I'm never, never, never gonna speed again. Pump the fluid in me, Louie. I'm burning up the freeway early this morning. I'm a passing everybody. Oh, nothing but corn, man, out of my way. I don't drive with my horn. Transfusion, oh nurse, I'm gonna make a new resolution. I'm never, never, never gonna speed again. Put a gallon in me, Allen. Oh, barnyard drivers are found in two classes, line crowding hogs and speeding jackasses. So remember to slow down today. Hey, daddy-o, make that type O, huh? Atta boy.
A little dark humor for you there, then. Nervous transfusion. All right, the next track, last track for the day. By traditional standards, Bebopalula has virtually no redeemable characteristics. The rhythm is primordial. The lyrics are nonsense. Vincent sounds as though his head is going to explode from exerting some semblance of self-control. The music possesses virtually no discernible nuance and exists for no other purpose than to arouse and titillate teenagers. Gene Vincent comes on like a feral lunatic possessed by the devil, and it genuinely frightened the segment of the population that flourished in the G. Willikers safety of the mid-50s conformity. This is a white man singing this song, for God's sakes. People were terrified. He took things to an extreme, performing like an asthmatic on the throes of an orgasm. But in essence, all that he did was rewrite Clyde McFadder and the Drifters' song Money Honey, turning it into a tense, liberating frenzy. The world was going to hell in a handbasket, according to society. But the kids just loved it. Here's Gene Vincent. Have a good weekend, folks. We'll see you next week. 90.3 WHBC with Bebopalula.
Well, Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby. Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby. Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, my baby, my baby. Well, she's the gal in the red blue jeans. She's the queen of all the teens. She's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so. Say, Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby.
Bebopalula, she's my baby, my baby, my baby.
Let's rock! She's the one with the flying feet. She's the one that walks around the store. She's the one that yells more, more, more. Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby.
Bebopalula, she's my baby. My baby, my baby, my baby.
Let's rock again now.
Bebopalula, she's my baby. Bebopalula, I don't mean my baby. Bebopalula, she's 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 my baby.